It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medication to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this edition of Senior Talk. We are talking about treatment that is now available to more patients through Eastern Maine Medical Center. It's called transcatheter aortic valve replacement. Almost at it. My guests are Dr. Matthew McKay, who is an interventional cardiologist with Northeast Cardiology Associates, and Ann Johansson, who's a family nurse practitioner and clinical director of the EMMC Structural Heart Clinic. Dr. McKay is based in Bangor. He's a graduate of Medical College in New York, and completed his internship and residencies at Beth Israel Hospital in Boston, and holds a number of certifications in cardiovascular disease and intervention cardiology, and is the director of EMMC's Transcatheter Structural Heart Clinic. Ann Johansson graduated from UMaine, go Black Bears, and has been with the Northeast Cardiology for 12 years. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
So, practice saying it a lot. Explain to me, Dr. McKay, what is transcatheter aortic valve replacement, known as TAVR?
Sure. So an interventional cardiologist is an invasive cardiologist that specializes in procedures that operate on the heart and the vascular system through tubes that are placed into your circulation. So instead of it being open surgery where you cut somebody's skin open and cut their body, you're introducing a tiny tube through the skin into one of their blood vessels, either in the groin area where it comes close to the surface of the body, or in an arm, most commonly. And then you have access to moving around inside the body with the equipment. The most common thing that interventional cardiologists work on is the coronary arteries, to sort of unblock spots that might be responsible for heart attacks. And that technology advanced so that we were able to put bigger pieces of equipment into people's hearts to replace bigger parts and take care of other things. So transcatheter aortic valve replacement is a procedure where you, minimally invasive, enter the body through a tube and insert a new valve into the main outflow area of the heart without opening the patient up. So that's the technology.
So in the past, the patient would have been...
Yeah,
the
standard treatment for that, the only way you could fix this problem, is by putting someone on a heart-lung machine, cardiopulmonary bypass, basically stopping their heart, having their chest completely open, cut open the aorta, and then take the old valve out and sew a new one in, sort of a two-hour open heart operation. And the operation was very effective at fixing the problem, but it's a big operation. And so, especially as patients were getting older, that people have been thinking for a long time, how could we maybe do this with less invasive, with less risk?
Because that sounds terrifying just on the face of it, especially if you're in your 70s or 80s.
And that's the problem with this disease, is it tends to affect that age group the most. So, in the past, you're talking about very big operations on people 70s, 80s, or even 90s.
Is this something that can be done now on everyone?
Close. It's close to that. In America, the FDA has approved the procedure. Starting in 2011, they approved it for people that were no option. They weren't considered even a candidate for surgery because of their comorbidities or other problems. Then a year later, the technology was looking so good that they approved it for a group of people that were just considered extra risk for surgery. And then 2 years ago in 2016, the FDA decided the technology was looking so good with its outcomes to approve it for a huge new group of people, which were only considered intermediate risk. So that became more of your average person somewhere 65 to 90s that had some other problems. They might be a candidate for surgery, but they also might prefer to go with a more minimally invasive way to fix the problem. The only group of people that has not yet been approved in the U.S. is the people they consider pure low risk. And that may change. We might see that FDA approval come around in the next year or two. We don't know yet. But part of the reason for that is that we know that in a younger person who needs to have a valve replaced, that, you know, if you have a regular surgical operation, you can put in a type of valve that they can expect to last for a long time. Meaning if, you know, you're hoping that valve, you know, you're in your 40s and you need it to last 25, 30 more years, they do make metal valves that can only be put in surgically. So that population has not been approved for TAVR yet.
How long do the valves last with the TAVR procedure?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the answer is we don't know because they haven't been going in for long enough. So in the U.S., approval was 2011. So we're about 7 years out now. And most of the valves are looking good at the seven-year mark, but we have no data really in the big populations for what happens after that. There were, you know, there are some patients out there that were enrolled in trials, especially in Europe, that were, you know, quite a bit earlier, 5+ years even before that. And I haven't heard any reports of those valves falling apart, but we really don't know about the longevity of the valve. The ones that are put in surgically that are just like the biologic valves we put in with TAVR, we roughly give them like a 15-year lifespan just as a ballpark because around that time you do start to see not infrequent deterioration of those valves. But there are cases that people walking around over 20 years that have the biologic valves and they have not degenerated. So, you know, there may be some other factors that we don't know about yet.
Can you have it done again? So if you have it done at 50 and then it deteriorates and so at 65, you're starting to go. Can you just redo it?
It's a great question. Yes, and people are already talking about that. You know, there are younger patients that you could see having the valve, you know, deteriorate 15 years, and then you're asking how you're going to stage it. Certainly TAVR could be done again, and the way the valve's made, you can actually insert a brand new one inside the old one without even taking it out. In most cases, you can do that, yeah.
So you'd buy someone another 15 years, and now they're in their 80s.
Yeah.
So
I mean, there's probably a limit to how many times that can be done valve and valve, but you know, at least twice is now fairly mainstream to be able to do that.
And as the technology increases, I would think that the old open the chest method would be.
Yeah, I think it's just going to get better for the minimally invasive techniques. You know, I think that the technology is allowing us to use smaller and smaller equipment, which, you know, is less of an insult to the body. And, you know, the complication rates should go down, I think, if anything, over time. And, you know, they're going to build valves that perhaps last longer and show less deterioration. So the engineers are busy at work looking at all those things.
Let's talk about recovery time, because I'm guessing if you have surgery, the recovery time is significant if you're having open heart surgery. What's the recovery time between that and the TAVR?
Yeah, I mean, open heart, you kind of have to go in expecting that you're going to have at least a 5-day hospitalization on average. And then you're telling people it's going to be 6 to 8 weeks before you're all healed up. And some people are kind of still feeling the effects of having gone through a big operation even beyond the 2 months. So it's a substantial, you know, recovery involved with open heart. With TAVR, it's just a completely different ballgame because you haven't cut anything. You haven't broken any bones. In most cases, there's no big incisions to heal. It's basically a puncture that's no more than a centimeter in length, usually in your groin, and two little internal stitches that don't even get taken out. And really, if the operation, if the TAVR procedure, I should say, goes well, there are patients that can even go home the next morning and just be back to doing what they want to do, more or less. It's, the recovery is very little. And we tell them to take it easy on the leg for a couple of weeks, not lifting heavy things, just so that puncture site doesn't give us problems. But usually after that first day, it's rare that, you know, there's much in terms of recovering from the operation. Now, there are potential complications, you know, so if you try to bring somebody who's in their 80s who has a lot of other problems through any procedure, things can come up that then, you know, delay them from getting out of the hospital. But, you know, things, you know, in terms of healing from the operation itself, it's pretty minimal.
Do you find any problems with insurance?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Who don't?
Ann can also help me with this, but I would say that we have not. I mean, there was worry about that in the beginning about, you know, whether Medicare was going to cover it and whether private insurers were going to be okay with this. And so far, it's reimbursed. I'd say we've had very few denials. Is that correct, Ann?
I'm not aware of any denials. Occasionally, we need to do prior authorizations for insurances other than Medicare, but Medicare does cover it, providing the patient meets all the qualification criteria, so it's covered.
So that's not an issue where they might have to have surgery because the insurance company, because they're kind of driving the bus sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, in a small way, they still are on this issue in that they have pretty strict criteria for when you will qualify. So they're not willing to pay for the device until your valve, the severity of your valve problem reaches a certain level. And those things are kind of clearly defined for us. So you and the tests to measure it are objective. And so if you haven't met the criteria, your coverage isn't going to work. So they do have to wait for that. They have to wait for their valve to meet the criteria.
For you to get bad enough to...
Yeah, for the valve to be bad enough for them to be willing to give the money.
Give the money.
Yeah.
If you would like more information on this, you can call the EMMC Structural Heart Center, 973-9504, 973-9504. We will be right back right after this. Lots more to come. Stay with us. Hi, we're back with Dr. Matthew McKay and Ann Johansson from Northeast Cardiology Associates. Ann, who do you think this procedure is good for?
Well, when patients come to see us, we assess their ability to take care of themselves and do every day-to-day things, you know, getting dressed, walking. And we find that people that are still relatively independent do very well with this procedure, as well as people who are interested in continuing to be with their families, their grandchildren, or someone that may have an important event coming up. So people who are still actively participating and looking forward to events do very well.
And why is that better for this procedure than, is it an either or? The ones who have still a lot to live for, are they not a good candidate for the open heart? What's that correlation?
Well, their medical condition and age makes recovery more difficult with open heart, so that a transcatheter-based procedure makes their recovery easier, but they also have this determination to get through this procedure as well, which really boosts their ability to recover.
So the mind over matter kind
of... Yeah, I mean, having the procedure, even though it's minimally invasive, it does test your resolve a little bit. And so there is a hump to get over, you know, for that person. And it sometimes is a big one for somebody who is, you know, getting on the frail side. And a lot of it has to do with the other medical problems they may have. So if they're developing, they're accumulating a number of different issues that have caused them to become very dependent and immobile, fixing the valve may not solve that problem for them. And if those problems are very, you know, if they're in a fragile state, you can even tip them over by trying to replace a valve when a number, for example, a number of other organs are having trouble just, you know, making it. So you have to, I think, look at the big picture and pick the patients where the valve seems to be a big limiting factor, and that if you can fix that part of it, there could potentially be a big turnaround.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So it's more about having something done as opposed to not having it done, and depending on what their mental state is. Do you find that there is a fear, a more of a fear factor along because it's heart as opposed to a knee replacement? Is there a mental stigma of, oh, they're going to operate on my heart, even though it's minimally invasive?
Yeah, I think so. But I also think there's probably some kind of mind-body interaction where your body and your whole being knows that we're messing with a sensitive thing here. The main outflow valve from the heart is kind of, you know, determining whether you're alive or dead. And somehow people are detecting that. They're detecting it when the valve starts to fail, their own valve starts to fail. And, you know, during those few, you know, moments where we're working on it, the body knows we're working in a sensitive spot. So you can tip somebody over and destabilize them if you're not, you're not sure that they're up for it.
Fascinating.
They need to be in on the, you know, the idea of getting better.
So the positive mindset, yeah, really does make a difference.
We think so.
Mm-hmm. What about care at home? So someone goes in, and I understand that if they're having the more invasive procedure, that they would need to have help. But with the TAVR, what's it like at home? Do they need to bring in home help, or can they pretty much just go about their day after a few days?
Well, for those individuals that are really independent coming into the procedure, there's no reason to think that they can't go home with the same level of independence, as long as they're careful about not overdoing initially. We certainly prefer family to be with them for 2 or 3 days because it just makes recovery easier for them. For the other people who are a little bit more frail or deconditioned, that we do have the ability to place home help in the home and or put them into a skilled facility if needed, but that's really not our first choice.
And what is the condition that someone has that would actually need this done?
Yeah, I think the other point that I think to Anne's comment about, you know, a patient that gets very debilitated, they have to be careful about not waiting too long. So waiting to that point where, you know, they're not well nourished, they haven't been walking in, you know, weeks or months, that could be a situation where they've let things get too far along. So if you're thinking that you'd like to have the valve replaced because it's causing a major setback in your life, not waiting too long is also important so that you don't become debilitated in a generalized fashion, you know.
So be in the best condition.
Yeah, you don't
want
to be you try not to be completely deconditioned when you finally come to the procedure. It's better if you catch it before that.
What are the symptoms that someone would have to, if they're starting to feel, will they know that the valve is deteriorating?
Yeah, usually they do. Usually the patient has identified that something is different. And, you know, if you ask the right questions, you'll get that from them. I would say the most common thing is for people to say yes to the question, do you notice that you have less energy getting around, or that you're a little bit more tired doing things than you used to be before? Or sometimes family members will describe it as they look like they need to slow down. That type of thing would, you know, it's kind of vague, but that's the most common thing that we'll hear them describe. More obvious, yeah.
When we come back, we will finish that thought and tell you maybe when you should see a doctor. Stay with us. We'll be right back right after this. So Dr. McKay, before the break, you were talking about symptoms and how someone might know that they were having maybe a valve issue, or if they can't define that, a heart issue. What are those symptoms?
Yeah, so the symptoms, like I said, most commonly would be someone noticing a decrease in exercise tolerance. And that can creep up on you kind of slowly, so it might not be a discrete moment where you feel something, but you say over the last 6 months, you just don't seem to be moving as fast as you did last year. More classic symptoms that you might have is unexpected feeling of shortness of breath with walking up a flight of stairs or not even making it all the way up and thinking, I don't usually feel short of breath with that little activity. Some people will feel a little pressure in their chest when they do something similar. Other patients will have more issues with lightheaded or even a fainting spell. I think your friend's relative was an example of how that could present, where you could just have an unexpected loss of consciousness for a few moments, and then you seem to come back. And all these symptoms really come from the strain that's put on the heart from not being able to pump enough blood flow to the brain and body, because everything has to come out through that valve. And when the valve gets old, sort of a wear and tear on the valve over the years, it doesn't let as much blood out as it should, and your body has a hard time pumping blood flow.
Do you find that older people may have those symptoms and think, oh, I'm just getting older, so I just can't do as much as I did, but that's because I'm 85 now?
Yeah, I think there's probably too many people out there that get written off as just being, you know, old, when they might have had a reversible problem. You know, if you put a new valve in them, they'd feel completely different, and their lifespan actually may change by a lot. So recognizing that you do have that problem is an important thing.
Is there a clinical diagnosis for this?
Aortic stenosis?
It's an aortic stenosis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just a fancy way of saying a valve has become narrowed.
Okay.
And the aortic valve is one of the more common ones to develop that. So just as a ballpark, people over the age of 65, about 1 in 50 people have at least moderate narrowing of that valve. And then once you have moderate, you're talking somewhere between 1 in 5 years to it becoming a problem where it's causing symptoms, just on average. And then over the age of 75, you're talking about 1 in 20 people having a moderate problem with that valve. So it's a pretty common problem.
If someone has a mild problem with that valve and they're listening to this show, they're thinking, oh, I might have some of that, but it's mild, can they do something to change it, or it's a done deal? Once it's started, no matter what you do, it's
unfortunately, we know of no way of changing the natural history of this disease. It's kind of like arthritis in your knee. It just keeps getting a little bit worse, and we don't have any medicines that change what's going to happen. We essentially watch it until it gets bad, and when it's bad, and that usually means starting to cause symptoms, it has to be replaced. And if you don't replace it, it means you're probably in the last 1 to 2 years of your life.
Just need to have it taken care of.
It has to be replaced.
Okay. And talk to me about, briefly, Northeast Cardiology and the Transcatheter Structural Heart Clinic. They're connected, right, through Eastern Maine?
Right. Cardiology is part of Eastern Maine, and the Structural Heart Clinic, the TAVR Clinic, is basically a subdivision where we have a team of physicians that are evaluating patients. It's not just one or two. We actually have a team meeting, reviewing cases, and making decisions about what's the best procedure for these individual patients.
A team approach.
Yeah.
Dr. McKay, any parting words for my listeners?
Yeah, well, we're happy that we can tell people about this. We found that people have had a very positive experience when they come in, because they get to talk face-to-face with two cardiologists and a heart surgeon and other people in our clinic, and can get a lot of information and perhaps change their lives.
Dr. Matthew McKay and Johansson, thank you so much for being here today. The number to call again is 973-9504, 973-9504, or log on to emmc.org/TAVR, TAVR. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks.